This is Phil Harvey. We're out at Leeds Musical Studios. Is that what it's called, Jeff?
Yeah, Leeds Rehearsal Halls.
Oh, uh-huh.
Rental.
And we're out here in North Hollywood. I'm talking with Jeff Porcaro from Toto. They just put out their new album, Toto 4, another project produced by yourselves, correct?
Correct.
And you have a hit on there right now. It's jumping right on off the record onto the radio, and it's called Rosanna. Is this a song that you had anything to do with in writing, or?
No, it was penned by David Page.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote Rosanna. I guess it's doing pretty good right now.
Yeah, it is. It takes a while sometimes for it to get back to you, doesn't it?
Well, we've lived with the album for about 7 months, so it's kind of hard to, right after the album's released, we're into rehearsals for a tour, so it's kind of hard to relate to what's going on the radio right now. We're just informed.
But then you go out and you play, and all of a sudden these people are recognizing the songs and singing along. What is that like for you?
Well, it proves to us the airwaves help. You know, no, it's nice that when your song or your album's played on the radio, people are familiar with tunes, so they come to, it's, gives them incentive to want to see this group live. And
mm-hmm.
We like performing these songs. So.
You got started in the Valley, here where we're talking. And playing around in garages or something, as I understand, were your early roots.
Yeah, North Hollywood, Van Nuys, Sherman Oaks. Most of us in the band went to school here, junior high school. And we're all, in fact, as the band stands now, all of us but Bobby Kimball grew up here, played in bands together, you know, all here in the Valley.
And you're a band that really has had a lot of a studio experience, especially you. And this is one way of really getting up there and started, but I guess that's an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of, well, the studio thing for us, I mean, we've growing up here in LA and whatnot, as musicians, we've always been into our instruments and playing. And so to every musician, at least in the Valley or in the Los Angeles area, being a studio musician or attaining that was kind of a goal when you were a little kid, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a profession. Some of us have been, you know, been into that. We don't consider ourselves career studio musicians. It was never meant to be that way. Like I myself started playing, I guess it was after I was playing with Steely Dan live on the road and whatnot, that I started getting called by Tommy Bolin or whatever to play on his album. And, you know, as people listen to those albums, and this was what I was like, 19, 20 years old. So as people hear that stuff, they say, well, you know, they call you to do a date and word gets around, well, this guy's not in a group, but he can play on your album. And so I never meant for me to be a real career studio player. I just do it because I enjoy playing, you know.
Sure.
It has its benefits, but.
Yeah, absolutely. And the experience of playing with people like that, too, must have been great.
Oh, for me, I'm still, it's funny, just turned 28, and I'm still in awe at the people. I've been lucky enough, and I laugh at this fact, that everybody I really admired when I was in junior high and high school, as far as, you know, listening to records, I have met or played with just through, you know, the channels that have been open for me in the field I'm in, you know. Gotten a chance to play with a lot of people. I always, you know, and it's great meeting them. You meet them on their session, and you're like, it's hard to relate, like, yeah, I was 15 loving your first four albums, you know.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's, it's still fun, and every day is pretty exciting for me when I meet somebody new and play with them.
In general, what are people in the rock and roll world like?
In the rock and roll, well, see, I don't party a lot and stuff. The only time I meet these people is in a working situation, the studio, or maybe there'll be dinner or something during a week's work with these people, but I don't hang out, so I'm not involved too much in the personal lifestyles of the rock and roll world. Yeah, because when it's down to working in a studio, it's fun and everything, but it's still work, and there's concentration and attention just to the music you're playing at that moment.
Jeff, when you were growing up here in the Valley, what records and radio stations were you listening to, and who did you like, and who did you eventually go on to play with? Can you tell a little story like that?
Yeah, I moved here, my family moved here from Connecticut in 66, and I was 11 years old, and my father was like, played jazz, so all I listened to was Miles Davis and classical music, because he was in the symphony. Never heard a Beatles album or any of that. In fact, the only, what would be considered, even rock and roll at the time, at least what I knew, because I lived in the we lived in the projects and stuff in Hartford, Connecticut, was Rufus Thomas, Walking the Dog. I remember my father bought that album in a record store, because all we had was Miles Davis, Elvin Jones records, you know. So it was like the first time I heard anything that wasn't bebop, you know, that had a backbeat and stuff. And then we moved out here. I remember we got off the 8 days driving up, we got off the freeway, and we went down Sunset, our first day in California, Los Angeles, and I see Mamas and Papas on the marquee at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And so I was pretty amazed about all that, you know, what was around me then. And so it kind of hit me. I was a real straight Boy Scout from Connecticut, and this is like 1966 in Los Angeles. So by the time I was, you know, my teens, I was way into Hendrix and pretty much that mold of a young little yippie, you know.
Yeah, and who else were you listening to besides Hendrix? Like, what were one of the bands that you heard that you eventually went on to play with, or any artists?
Oh, man, there's really a lot. Well, let's say, like, stuff like, I just did the new Crosby, Stills, and Nash record. And that was pretty amazing, because, I mean, that was from that period of time, 69, you know, 70, 71. You know, during I was them, Hendrix, you know, there was that Woodstock. I managed to meet a lot of those people and play with them, except for Jimmy. I wish I could have met him. I'm trying to think who else. Started off the top of my head. You know, things like, stuff like in school, when I was in high school, Steely Dan came out, and I thought they were the most amazing band in the world. And just 2 years later, I was playing with them, and that was like, that's what I mean. It was that kind of. Kind of took me by surprise.
What album was that you played on? What Steely Dan album?
Pretzel Logic. And then I did that album, and then I went on the road with them, joined the band. Mike McDowell and I joined the band for their last tour, which was like a year and a half on the road. Then they kind of just broke up the band, and it was just four of us. It was Denny Diaz, Fagan Becker, myself, and we did Katie Lied with Mike McDowell. And then I had my only relationship, then that was finally the dissolving of a whole Steely Dan band who was just left to Fagan and Becker. So I'm still involved with them when it comes to their albums.
Are they doing anything right now?
Donald, I just finished a couple months ago a solo album with Fagan. And that should be out, you know, June, around then. Good album.
And you, while you were playing all these other dates, you and David Page, you knew each other while all of this was happening.
Well, yeah, when I was like 13 with my little, you know, our neighborhood bands, Page and I met through our fathers, and Page joined the little band that we had. It was like an R&B band. We did like, you know, top 40, you know, Motown stuff, you know, Sam and Dave things.
So then you guys met again later on and decided?
No, the thing is, we were like, you know, school friends all the way up to high school. And when it was time to graduate, I left. I went on the road with Sonny and Cher doing Vegas and their TV show, and David went to SC. So I went on from Sonny and Cher, I went on to Steely Dan. So we really didn't see each other a lot, except for when I'd come back in town for a couple years. And it was during that time that we were start talking about, we got to put a group together, you know, because we had seen all these, Ben played with all these other groups, seen, you know, we kind of like what, really wanted to be a group and do an album and go on the road, and we thought we could do it. And it took up until, 77, 78 for us to finally do it.
Right. And that's when Hold the Line came out.
Yeah.
That was your first hit as Toto.
Right.
In a band that you were an instrumental part of, no pun intended. How did that happen, the whole Hold the Line?
Like I said, David and I were talking about putting a band together. The two of us did about six demos at Davlin Studios. Leonard Cover gave us free time. We did six of Page's tunes. It was all keyboards and drums, you know, keyboard, bass, any little parts. David sang. Columbia heard those six demos. This is when we were doing the Boz Skag Silk Degrees album, right after that. So we were together with the Columbia people on there, and they really were interested in what we had happening. And so they said, yeah, we want you guys to be, you know, we'd like to sign you guys, whatnot. And that's when David and I sat down, and it was this bit, let's have a group. Well, during this whole 2 years before that, we were looking at my brother Steve and Steve Lukather, who were 3 years behind us in high school, and they would be in my father's garage rehearsing, you know, they were in a band together. We're checking out that situation, going, yeah, these two guys, when we put a band together, and we tried out some singers, we got Bobby. And Hungate at the time, David Hungate now, was with me with Sonny and Cher and Paige, and we all always ended up, he did the Silk Degrees thing. So he, David was in the band at the start, and now my brother Mike's doing it. But that's we, back in 78, that's how we put the band together. Completely equal thing, you know, the guy said, well, you and David should do a, put a group together, salary, you know, and all that business thing. We said, no, these guys are, you know, this is going to be a group, six equal guys. And so that's how it started.
Great. And so when did your brother join? How recently?
Now, that was just recently. After about 2 years ago, David Hungate moved to Nashville. He got a great piece of property, and he's into, like, his farming and whatnot. In L.A., you know, like, I just know exactly how he feels sometimes about his living in L.A. if you're going to have a family and all that. He was really, he loved Nashville. So living there, he started doing production work. And so I think he started his own production company, and he just didn't want to be in a group anymore, go on the road, you know, travel, make that kind of commitment anymore. So he decided to leave, and my brother Mike, who plays bass, who had first refusal of the group when the group started, you know, didn't want to do it at that time because he was into his own, improving on his own career and whatnot. He thought it was too premature. Well, now it's naturally fallen into place. So now Mike's in the band, and it's kind of nice. Two brothers.
Now, you're known for a lot of the studio work that you've done, and I'm aware of the fact that you also were on the road with Steely Dan. But how do you feel about playing live and touring
Oh God, I love touring. It's funny. For the last 8 years, I've always managed to be on the road at least 6 months out of each year. And these last 2 years, I haven't been on the road except for I went to, maybe going to New York or Miami or somewhere to record with somebody for a couple of weeks, whatnot. So I've really missed playing live, but I love that more than anything in the world, touring and playing. I love traveling and meeting people. And
have you ever played in Japan before?
Yeah, 2 years ago. It was March of, 80? March of 80 we were in Japan.
It's really interesting what's happening now with the police touring all over the place and going to God knows where, and it playing rock and roll for people that have really never heard it before.
I think they're unique and real fortunate, the police, in that aspect. Those are three guys who I think their music, number one, is universal in the first place, a real international sound. And number two, they've got their tunes, I think it's got something for everybody to really kind of relate to, no matter where you're from. And number three, these guys have the momentum, the desire to do that. I don't know any of them personally, but I've read lots of, nice articles with them, and I'm just going on what I think I've read them to say, is that that's pretty much their intention, and they've done a damn good job of it.
That's a pretty nice recommendation. Yeah,
well, that's pretty true to their... And as a musician, and knowing other musicians, Police are probably one of the most respected groups for the fact that there's three guys and the music they make is, they're real true to the sense of the word when it comes to what they're playing. Their records sound live, feel live, sound great, inventive, innovative, whatever, they're great.
Right. So so maybe, music isn't in a big slump anymore like everybody had said it was, that there's a lot of new energy happening. And you take a band like the Go-Go's or somebody that comes out of nowhere and shoots right to the top of the charts
their
first album.
I don't think you could tell a group like the Police that, as far as that being the music being in a slump or the industry, because everybody remembers those guys started off with no deal in the United States, and they worked their butts off to let everybody know about them. I remember all these little EP records and special editions and A&M gradually, and all of a sudden it's their thing worked, their dedication, and I know they struggled a lot. I think I read some funny stories about some stuff, but anyway, they did good.
So Jeff, where do you really want to go? What do you have going on up here? Where are you headed?
Oh, me personally, I have a lot. It's really intense. My girlfriend doesn't even understand. No, I mean, I love the band. We all love this band. It's an intense thing with six intense guys to keep, to keep that level thing going, because for everybody it's just, it's a 24-hour-a-day thing in everybody's minds. It really is. It's such a strong vehicle. And there's a love we have for it that sometimes doesn't relate to the real world and real business and all that. which is, you know, sometimes there's friction there, not, you know, not within ourselves, but with us and outside forces. But we kind of got a grip on things right now. We want to keep doing this group, touring a lot, making more records. Mm-hmm. Maybe then we can all retire. I want to retire and paint someday, you know.
You're an artist?
Oh, that's my first love. See, like, this is all an accident for me in all reality. It's like drums was something that I knew when I was 10 years old, but when I was in high school, I was an art major, and I took a gig with Sonny and Cher so I could make enough money to go in to Cal Arts, because, you know, so I can go to art school with my friends. But after I went on that tour, things got better, you know, and I had fun playing drums and stuff, and so I'm still, like, making money to go to art school.
Well, you know, what you're doing now is an art, too.
I just, you know, I got to grab onto it while it's here and make the best of it.
Sure. Do you know Dwight Twilley?
No, I don't.
He's an amazing artist.
Really?
he has an exhibit, I think they're just getting ready to tear it down, but down at the Museum of Rock Art. Unbelievable amounts of art that this guy has produced, and it's beautiful.
Oh, wow.
I interviewed him down there when it happened, and came across a whole other side to Dwight Twilley that I didn't even know existed.
Because I'm doing the inside cover of the new Steely Dan Greatest Hits Volume 2 album. Because what I would do is, the only way I ever get a chance to do any art is when I'm in the studio and we've got these big pages that are your tracking sheets, 24 track, you know, little boxes and what instruments on, and on the back it's playing. So whenever there's most albums I do, if I'm hanging around and they're just mixing, I end up drawing sketches on the back of those kind of things.
Great. Well, you know, maybe you'll get the chance to pursue that, you know, later on. You got to do it one thing at a time, I guess. Maybe I can chase down your brother and I can talk to him for
a little while.
Okay.
Hold on.
This is Brother Mike, right?
Yes.
And you are the newest member of the band. And how did you end up playing in Toto? How did all this come about?
David Hungate left the band. You know, and it's as easy as that. After this album, with the tour coming up, I guess David decided he is real busy in Nashville and he's got his family down there, and decided he didn't want to do the tour and all the work that it entailed. It was time to split, so.
There was an opening, huh?
Yes.
And it just so happened that your brother was in the band. And you came.
Two brothers in the band.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
How can you miss?
So, now, what album did you first start playing on?
Right. I haven't. This last album was completed before. This is about a 3-week development here.
Yeah.
I see. So then you're going to go out there, and your first experience with Toto, really, I guess, is going to be playing live then.
Yeah. Yeah. Japan is in, what, May 1st?
Yeah.
Have you played, you know, live before much?
Yeah. Out of high school, I was with Seals and Crofts for 2 years. Touring most of the time for those 2 years, it was I was out about 8 months out of the year, and then Boz Scaggs, Jeff and I were doing Boz for a while, and since they've been busy with the band the last couple of years, I've been going out with Boz. Last couple of years, he does 3 weeks out, Vegas. Where do we do Tahoe or someplace like that?
Mm-hmm. So were you also involved on the Silk Degrees project then?
No, that was that was after the Silk Degrees project. I follow Hungate around, you know.
Yeah. Maybe next year going to Nashville.
I do the tour.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, great.
I wonder what band he's going to do next.
Okay. Well, you were playing around the valley, I guess, in valley bands. What you know? What were your early experiences there? What kind of stuff were you playing, and who you playing it with?
Jeff Page and I were in bands through school. Had a band called Rural Still Life, and we did what would you call it? R&B band. It was an R&B band. We do the Leon Russell, Joe Cocker, you know, experience.
Yeah, I think you told me a little bit about that,
yeah,
too. you let the cat out of the bag there. Okay, so then you don't plan on playing on the next album then? Don't look at your questions.
I definitely plan on playing on the next album. And I mean, David left the band, but he left the band as this new album was completed. So my tenure with the band starts right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you write as well as play?
A little bit, yeah. I'll be getting much more into it now with the guys, now that we're going to be doing it together. I'll be up there at the Pages with Steve and Paige, and just like everybody contribute to stuff.
So the plan is to go on tour, and then you're going to come back and do your next album, is it?
Yeah.
How does that take place in making the albums? When does the writing take place? Is it on the road, or do you get in the studio and play?
It's everywhere. I mean, the guys have written stuff on the road.
That kind of happens on the road. We'll be writing together. Even in the studio, when we go in to make an album, we write together. It's not that we write 10 tunes and say, these are the tunes, rehearse them, and go in the studio. We usually do between 20 and 30 tunes when we do an album and pick the best, you know, the final thing. But the writing process goes on daily,
goes on all the time.
No matter where you are, what you're doing with these guys. I mean, six guys that write, and so it's pretty well covered.
Well, what usually happens first? Does it come out of the rhythm section, and then someone writes vocals? How does it happen?
Well, what happens is it happens in various amounts of ways. Sometimes one guy will write a tune. He'll have the lyrics and the music finished, maybe put it on tape, you know, do his own little home demo, or do a demo with three guys. Maybe two guys will get together. Sometimes the music's done, but there's no lyrics, so two different guys. You know, it's all different combinations the way it works out. Every conceivable way to write a tune has we've experienced and has gone down.
What bass players do you admire? Do you like? Are there any influences? Anybody?
Man, I like them all. There aren't any. I don't have any major influences on bass players.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many great players in this town, in New York, in every town, in Oshkosh, wherever. Man, I've seen them. You know. But most of the guys, I mean, the old jazz bass players, the Ray Browns, and even more to me, a guy, Chuck DeMonaco in this town, a string bass player, who just growing up, my father's a studio musician, and in that scene, he influenced me more than anybody, I mean, as far as his playing. And, all the Jaco, they're all great, you know. On and on, name after name.
Have you seen this this electric bass that Sting has?
The Steinberger.
Is that what it is?
The Steinberger. The one with no tuning machines up on top. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
The real tiny square one? Yeah, I've seen them.
It has an amazing sound to it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sklar and Willie Weeks.
It's you can put it all the way under the track, and it's just this rumble. The first time I heard it, is it Don't Stand So Close to Me that it's on? And the first time I heard it,
I don't know if they used it on that.
Yeah, the first time I heard it in my apartment, the speakers were a little out of phase or something. They started feeding back on each other. My whole house started to shake. You know, I thought we were having another earthquake out here or something.
We'll put the speakers back in phase.
That won't happen next time. Okay, I'm pretty much finished with my questions here. If there's anything else that you guys want to talk about or go into,
everything's ahead of us.
How about these guys that, you know, are really into rock and roll, and they love it and they live it and they breathe it like you? But they're all around the country. There's a million rock and roll bands. And what's your advice?
That's advice. God. Just don't get too crazy. Don't get out of hand. No, seriously. You know, it's really, you know, it's hard, especially for bands and stuff, and you have faith in your band, and some bands are put together with, you know, guys all loving each other, and it's an equal working little group, and some are, you know, maybe a couple writers with a band, but, you know, everybody just be comfortable with the work you're doing and make sure you're happy to your commitment. And that's the best you could do. I mean, the rest is just going to be luck and chance anyways, believe me, you know, because you can't say you're better than the next guy or it won't happen. So, you know, whatever.
Because you're not better than the next guy.
Right. Okay, well, I have everything I need here, and
right,
it's been really interesting talking to you.
Yeah.
You too, Phil.
Thank you.
Right. Take care.